Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
At this point, "We Come in Peace" is off the table when you bring shotguns to an alien meet.
Whoa!
Just don't come here anymore. Don't visit.
Hello, you're listening to Weird Tales and the Unexplainable. This is Bob Choi, and with me as always is Luke Beef.
Hey, it's Luke Beef here.
And Adam Tiss.
Hey, Adam Tiss here.
How you doing, boys?
Good.
Good. Good, thanks. Yeah.
Lovely stuff. So do you know what we're talking about today?
I haven't got a clue. Not a clue.
I haven't the foggiest.
Not a Scooby.
No. So this episode's gone through like a little bit of a transformation in the last couple of days when I started running out of time. I've been, surprise, surprise, incredibly busy. So originally my plan was, do you remember a long time ago I did an episode on Weird Japan?
Yes. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, all about superstitions and beliefs and weird things that had happened in Japan or weird places in Japan. Mm. And I said, I feel like this could be the start of something new. I could just take places and talk about a wide variety of things in these places. And then I never did another one like that. So my plan originally was to do that because recently a listener on our Facebook had suggested that we looked into Alaska because of lots of weird things in Alaska. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. So I started looking into it. But all the stuff I looked into was related to a very specific part of Alaska. So I decided to focus in on that instead. And so this time we're going to talk about the Alaska Triangle.
Oh, I'm excited now.
I've not heard of this.
No, I hadn't heard of this either. But everything I started looking into in Alaska would link back to this one area again. So there's a lot of strange goings on.
Kind of like the Bridgewater Triangle that I did a few years ago.
Exactly, that's what it reminded me of. So it's almost like a companion to that. And obviously we spoke about a Bermuda Triangle before when we did the Weird Oceans episode.
Why is it always triangles?
I don't know. In this case, so I've got a map here.
It's always like a loose triangle, isn't it?
It's like roughly between like three different destinations and then they just draw a line between them, link them.
Right.
So if you look at this picture here, of Alaska.
That is a triangle.
And that triangle, what sort of triangle would you say that is? I don't know my triangles. Isosceles?
Isosceles, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's a big isosceles triangle. And so from down here, you've got Anchorage.
Uh-huh.
Up here, you've got Barrow.
Mm.
And then this triangle, the bottom corner down here, is Juneau.
Huh.
And so this triangle, sometimes it's called the Alaskan Bermuda Triangle. I don't see the point of that. The Bermuda Triangle is by Bermuda.
Yeah.
So we're just going to call it the Alaska Triangle.
Yeah, makes sense.
So what sort of thing are you guys expecting from the Alaska Triangle?
Surely if it's in Alaska, I'm gonna want some kind of Yeti would be ideal if it's, you know, nice and cold, perfect environment for Yeti.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, some kind of, like, there seem to be lots of cryptid activity
some
in America.
Some sort of creature. Okay.
So a creature of some sort, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tiss, anything in particular you're expecting to run into?
The first thing I thought of was wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that.
Ooh. Lycanthropy.
Like a wolf tornado in the middle of a triangle.
So what it is it's a wolf-nado. Real grab bag of things. It's not a wolf tornado, no.
Wolf-nado.
But it's a real grab bag of events, but mainly it comes back to a huge amount of disappearances.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So since 1988, there has been more than 16,000 disappearances in that triangle.
What?
How many?
16,000.
What?
16,000 since when? Sorry, since...
Since 1988, so the year I was born. So since I was born, 16,000 cases of disappearances in the Alaska Triangle.
Oh my days. That is insane. That is approximately 484 disappearances every year.
It can go up to, some years it's been reported up to 2,000 in a year.
What?
That's mental. What's in the middle of it? What's there?
Well, I think that's what we're going to try and get to the middle of.
Right.
So, I mean, the way I'm going to lay this episode out is we're going to talk about his disappearances and then we're going to go through the potential causes of these disappearances and see if we can work out what it is that's causing it.
Fuck. 16,000.
It's a lot, isn't it?
I mean, it's too many. It's what? Almost like, what are they counting as disappearances here? Is it like, I lost a sock?
After the first 1,000, you'd send out like some sort of, I don't know.
Just don't come here anymore. Don't visit.
A lot of it is aeroplanes going missing.
Is it really?
Really?
So a lot of aeroplanes. So that happens with the Bermuda Triangle as well, doesn't it? With boats and stuff. They go into it and then no one ever sees them again.
Yeah, it was boats and planes, yeah. But what do they count? 16,000, I want to know, is it all people? Or are they? Is it like, oh, I lost my cat?
No, disappeared. This is human disappearances.
Look, missing cat.
Can't pad out the numbers with cats.
In 1950, so this is way before, like the real golden era is from 1972. That's when the high profile cases started happening. But in 1950, military craft went missing with 44 passengers on board. So that's a big lot of people to disappear in one go. Never seen again.
Jesus.
And there's been other aeroplanes that gone missing. In 1990, there was a Cessna 340 that went missing with 5 people on board. But the real sort of case that really drew people's attention was in October of 1972. And a private plane went missing at that time with 2 notable people on board. There was 4 people on board, but 2 very notable, which is what got the headlines. And it was the U.S. House Majority Leader, Hale Boggs, and the Alaska Congressman, Nick Begich. Their plane went missing when they were flying to Juneau from Anchorage, as well as one of their aides, Russell Brown, and the pilot, Don Johns. The search lasted more than a month looking for these guys. Very high-profile disappearance. They searched an area of 32,000 square miles. More than 50 planes went on this search, as well as another 40 military aircraft, dozens of boats, but no trace was ever found of these guys. No plane, no wreckage, no debris, nothing.
That's crazy.
So, and you know, relatively high-profile people to disappear into thin air.
Sorry to, I mean, it's not a digression. I've just, while you've been talking, just Google mapped Alaska.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it was a big state, but it is ginormous.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's like the size of the central part of Northern America, just in one state. It's massive.
What's amazing about that many disappearances as well, like Alaska's huge, but you would think the population would be far less because it's so inhospitable.
Yeah.
So for that many people to go missing on somewhere where there's that few people is even more bizarre.
Yeah, it is. Wow, so they just disappear. 32,000 square miles is a lot of area to... And it's not as if it could just be anywhere. They had a flight plan, so you just follow the flight plan and...
Exactly, they knew they were flying from Anchorage to Juneau. So am I pronouncing that right? I actually don't know the place, Juneau. It's Juneau. Juneau. I've been saying Juneau.
I don't know.
Let's just say Juneau, and I'm sure someone will correct us, I'm sure.
I'm going to say Juneau. If we're wrong, guys, we're sorry, but that's how we're going to pronounce it from now on. but that's where they were flying, anchorage to Juneau. So that's right along, that's one of the main lengths of the Alaska Triangle. So yeah, 32,000 miles. Considering that's one flight path, they really spread that search out as well.
Wow.
But no trace was ever found. It says more than a month. I think it was something like between 33 and 38 days in total. The search went on.
That's mental. I can't get my head around planes just disappearing. I just can't get my head around it, because it's not as if, like, when you plan a flight route, you know, weather patterns, although the weather can be unpredictable, it's not that unpredictable. And actually, just before you get on a plane, you can check. And, you know, if it's going to be a nightmare, then you don't fly. So I just find it crazy that planes can just disappear. And particularly with the technology they've got and black boxes and all this stuff they've got on board to help people find a plane crash.
Yeah, I mean, this was 1972, so I don't know what plane technology was like, but 72, I expect this. Juneau.
Thanks, Tiss.
Thanks, Tiss.
Juneau. Please don't keep pressing it.
Sorry.
But yeah, 1972, I imagine plane technology, like they're able to track planes and stuff, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, they've gone to the moon by then, so you'd expect...
I mean, it is mental that they've gone to the moon. By then.
Yeah.
I can't imagine them being able to go to the moon now. We talked about it on the moon landing episode, but I can't believe they went to the moon when they did. Every now and then I think about it, I'm just like, that's bizarre.
Joel won't believe it. Joel doesn't believe it. Like, he said to me, he's like, one day I'd like to go to the moon. I'm like, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe you can one day. And I said, some people have been to the moon. And he goes, daddy.
It does sound ludicrous.
He's like, no. I'm like, yeah, definitely. People have been on the moon.
Joel won't believe they put a man on the moon.
Classic.
Wow.
Outro music this week. Not relevant at all to the topic.
Doesn't matter.
So yeah, a hell of a lot of disappearances. Anyway.
Mental.
Including these guys. And I was trying to dig into this. I was like, oh, what more information is there about these guys? Because this was, I said, one of the listeners sort of suggested Alaska, and this is one of the things they suggested, like, oh, really famous disappearance. And so I thought, oh, there's going to be a lot of meat to this. But it was just like, yeah, they went missing and no one ever found them. Like, that's the information, because no one ever found them and they just went missing.
That's crazy. I mean, I suppose that was the only thing that was going through my head, was maybe, like, if they looked at the map, I don't know. My Alaskan geography isn't very good. It's not just not good, it's completely lacking.
But you just had to look at the map of where Alaska was.
Exactly, yeah. I knew where it was, I just didn't know how big it was. Yeah, but like you say, in my mind, a lot of Alaska sounds to be inhospitable, like you couldn't live there. So, yeah, maybe in my mind was that maybe they couldn't search.
I mean, people do live there, but you couldn't live in a lot of mountains and stuff.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Like, you could... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so my thought was maybe a lot of it is just mountain ranges or something. I don't know. But obviously not. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Hard to search, though, isn't it? Like a mountain range for a crashed plane, like crevices and things.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard to search that type of landscape, isn't it?
That's what went through my head.
Inhospitable, like you said.
Inhospitable, that was the word I was trying to crank out.
Word of the week.
I couldn't get it out.
But yeah, if they still manage to search that much...
I've got a question, actually.
Yeah, go on.
Does that flight path now, is that expensive because people don't want to fly it? Or is it cheap because people would rarely want to go it?
I don't know. Do you want to do a Weird Tales flight? Anchorage to Juneau.
No, I do not.
We just recorded.
Cold as fuck.
That's the reason why.
It'd be so cold.
It's too cold.
I don't
cold.
Mind getting lost in the equator.
Wouldn't you like to go to Alaska, though?
Yeah, I would. But not anymore now because of this story.
Right, okay. Just stay outside the triangle. You'll be fine, mate.
Well,
to let you down.
Yeah.
So let's have a look at some causes then. And one interesting note. Do you know Chris McCandless?
No.
No.
He was... So there was a famous book about him. He was a guy who was a traveller, basically. And they made a film about it. It's called Into the Wild. I don't know if you've ever seen Into the Wild.
I think I've heard of it.
I haven't. You told me to watch it years ago and I never did.
Yeah, it's a very famous film. It's really good. It's really long. It's one of those really long ones. but that he where he eventually met his end was within the Alaska Triangle. And a lot of people say there's something suspicious about the way that he died. It was not to spoil the end of anything, but he died from something he should have known better from with all his traveling experience. So people say that might have been an effect of him being within the Alaska Triangle at the time as well.
Bizarre.
Wow.
But yeah, it's a film's worth a watch, Into the Wild. But yeah, let's have a look at some causes for all these disappearances then. So Beef, you already said about the weather.
Yep.
Potentially.
Mm.
So I've got that as a possibility here. Severe weather. I just put severe weather, ? Avalanches?
Yeah, I guess so. And just cold? Is it too cold? Maybe like Tis said, is it too cold for planes? Or
yeah, and also like hikers and things like that. If you're walking, if you're mountain climbing, an avalanche goes off. But do you know what I mean? That's all well and good. But like we said, 16,000. That explains some.
Yeah, that's more people than surely live in Alaska.
That's more people than there is weather.
That is insane. I mean, I went to Minneapolis in the middle of winter, and that was minus, like, there were some days it was like minus 20. I couldn't breathe. It was so cold.
That's pretty rough. It's been cold here.
So imagine if your car broke down. And it's that cold. You would die.
Yeah.
The coldest day I've had recently here was minus 5. I was working on site at minus 5 and all the taps were frozen solid and stuff.
I bet your hands must have been freezing cold.
Oh, they're a real mess at the moment. My hands are really dry. I keep putting hand cream on.
Yeah.
It's actually warmed up the last couple of days, but it's been pretty cold here. That's what I get for moving up to the north, isn't it?
Well, we did try and tell you.
Is it the dry heat that's drying them out then?
It's just because it's wet, dry, wet, dry. Don't forget, I have a wet trade, so my hands get wet and then dry all day.
Mm.
And it's freezing.
Fuck.
Ugh.
But yeah, severe weather, avalanches. I don't really know how... I get that causes some disappearances. I don't think it's enough to explain as many as there are.
How many disappearances, by contrast, in like a similar style country?
So it's at least... more than double the national average, which is more extreme when you consider how small the population is of somewhere like Alaska compared to other places.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the national average for America is like 8,000, something like that.
Yeah, it's like half of that, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds slightly, high, though, slightly still. Less than half, yeah.
Considering when you think that a missing person... makes the news, like national news.
If someone goes completely missing and no trace, it's normally...
massive news, yeah. They must have a news channel directly just for missing persons. Like, or, yeah, planes.
Everyone's bored of it. It's like whenever we hear something about Corona, like, ugh.
Yeah, or another 600 people died. All right, okay.
So weather, what else have we got? You said about wolves. One of the possible causes, wild animals. Again, this is one of the things you see on lists, and I'm like, explain. How are wild animals causing this many disappearances?
Is it, I don't know, is there that much of a disruption to the food chain that they're just hunting humans down? Don't know. What kind of, because I, until a few years ago, I didn't realise how big moose were.
Oh my goodness, they are huge.
I saw a video of a moose walking down the road.
Is that like one walking down the road?
Yeah. And
that was going around Twitter and I was like, this is fake. And yeah. It's not.
No, because I've seen a few more since then.
I need to see this.
And they're like 7 foot high. Have you not seen these, Tis?
Tis, just put like moose walking down the road. It's like a real famous video clip that was going doing the rounds on social media.
It's going to blow your nut, mate.
No, surely not.
Yeah,
a car is like double the size of a car. Fuck off.
Yeah. They're massive.
Is that a real moose?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're massive, mate.
What?
Look at this.
This is why...
I live for these reactions.
I know. Listeners don't get the half of it with us watching Tiss's face.
Wait, it fucking...
Look at this big fella here. Wow, Kalia, look at him, he's huge.
What?
We've blown Tiss's mind of how big a moose is.
Whoa!
There, bud.
Oh my days.
Is this like case closed? Now we've seen how big a moose is, it explains all the disappearances.
Yeah.
They look so gentle though.
Well, because, well, I mean, I'm 90% not that high. I'm quite sure that's very high.
I like the way you checked yourself.
I'm quite sure that the moose are herbivores. Right?
Yeah, I think they are herbivores.
Could you imagine if they were carnivores? Like,
they'd be running the world, running the planet, yeah.
That'd be terrifying. Yeah, they're massive. Yeah, look at them. That's like, what, 7 foot high?
They're about 3 meters.
Big, aren't they? Big old boys.
Could you imagine if that goes up on its hind legs and just, like hoofs you in the chest? You'd be dead.
Are they docile?
Well, I'd imagine, unless you did something to upset it.
They charge you.
Well, it's like when you walk through a cow field. Like, they're pretty happy, unless, I don't know, you might run up to them and start shouting.
Yeah, I don't think they would just charge you for no reason, a moose.
And I don't know how many of the 16,000 you could blame on moose, but I think
my point is that everyone might have been thinking that. I don't think they'll charge you, and then they'll get run down by these moose.
Yeah.
Is it moose? Is it mooses or meese?
That's more than one of them. Let's find out. Hey, Siri.
Get run down by meese.
What's the plural for moose?
Is it muesli?
They're called a herd.
The only correct plural of moose is moose. So I think it's one of those things where one moose...
Oh, it's like sheep.
Yeah, like one moose is moose.
That makes sense, actually.
Yeah.
I was going to say like goose, but that's geese.
Like...
Oh, this episode's all over the place. I knew it would be. I knew this episode would be all over the place.
I was also going to say mouse, but then I was thinking about... Like, cheeses for us meeses.
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought.
A group of... It says here a group of crabs is called a consortium.
Mm, I love them. I love those, like, gather words, like murder of crows and all that stuff. Mm. I tried to make a fake one up a little while ago, but I can't remember what it was. It was a good one.
Colony. Bats. Bats is colony of bats. Wow.
Mm.
A consortium. That sounds a bit, like, legal.
Bit well to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
What was that for? Crabs.
Yeah.
It's like a law firm. Crab, and crab consortium.
There's no collective noun for a group of koalas. There you go. You can make one up for koalas.
All right, a bastard of koalas.
A group of foxes is called a skulk.
Anyway, right, so wild animals, as big as these moose, as these meese are, and as scary as these packs of wolves are, I don't think wild animals is enough to explain all these experiences. Another one. This is another obvious. We're getting all the obvious ones out of the way. So weather, animals, and now I've just got the general wilderness.
Mm.
So you've got dense forestry. A lot of people can go missing in that. You've got mountain peaks. You've got huge glaciers with surprise holes in glaciers that you can fall through. You've got hidden caves in amongst the crevices. Yeah. And on top of that, you've got massive snowfall over all of that.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I think is the thing. It's so cold and the snowfall will just cover things so quickly.
Mm.
I know the Yukon is in Canada. But does it, like, spill into Alaska?
I've got that on the map, actually. That map I showed at the beginning, you can see the Yukon on that. So the triangle is might be hard to see, but this is the Yukon, this bit here. So the triangle goes slightly over the corner of the Yukon.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, all I know is that Bear Grylls has done an episode in the Yukon, so it must be pretty horrific terrain.
Did he go missing?
Well, yeah, he died in the Yukon, yeah.
That's the last episode.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I don't know how often this... Because I don't know, like, I always find this weird with hikers, when you get hikers that just go missing. Because to be into that kind of stuff, you need to be pretty good at, like, orienteering.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it really hard to understand, like, how you could just get lost. I know it's massive.
Yeah, you can't account for everything, can you?
No, I know.
There's giant moose out there.
If you're good at walking, you should not be getting lost, period.
But it's like an F1 driver getting lost around the track. Oh, which way am I supposed to... Is it that way? Or like, no, are you...
Not quite.
This is all... This is
not quite
that straightforward.
It's not the same. A track that has got one way to go around is not the
fucking
same
loop
as the world.
He doesn't even come to like a junction.
Yeah, but...
gets lost coming out the pit stop.
There's not even a roundabout in it, mate.
Yeah, but if you go hiking, there are trails that you go on.
Yeah, but me and Becca go on hikes and we get lost all the fucking time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And we go with maps and we still get lost.
Yeah. Why don't you just go with your iPhone? Can't you just do that?
No, you still get lost.
In the Yukon, there's no signal.
Probably not.
They take your iPhone off you before you enter the Yukon.
But some people, I think my point, what I'm trying to say is, if you go hiking, you go in a group. There are nutters out there that go on their own.
Yeah, Becca's going to start going on her own because I do her head in.
She's a nutter.
I moan to fuck. Because I get like an hour and a half into a hike and I'm like, I thought you said this was a walk. You need to differentiate whether it's a walk or a hike. Because if it's a hike, I need to be in the right mood. If it's a walk, yeah, all right.
Yeah. What's a hike? A longer than an hour and a half?
Yeah, like varied terrain and like 2 or 3 hours minimum.
Yeah. Oh.
We've been on some big ones. I've been conned into some big ones, I will say. She cons me into it because she makes... We got a rice cooker, a Japanese rice cooker, so she makes nice, like, onigiri.
Yeah.
With, like, pickled plum and stuff in it. And I'm, like, wrapped in seaweed, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I want some of that. And I make some, like, soy fermented eggs, and then I eat the eggs. I'm like, I'm going to go on a walk so I can eat all those goodies. And then I realize we've been walking for hours, and I've been, like, conned into it.
Oh my god,
wilderness, bad wilderness, people going missing.
Yeah, I was being a bit silly. I do understand that it must be quite easy to get lost in such a vast
landscape.
Oh yeah,
driving wrong way down a F1 track.
All
that's
of our hiking listeners are listening on their hikes right now, just like, what the fuck.
I love that some of our listeners listen when they're on walks and hiking and stuff. I absolutely love that.
Well, if they're lost, they're going to feel pretty frustrated, because apparently they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I went for a hike the other day.
Yeah.
The other day. It was like weeks ago.
2019.
Met a friend. Met a friend for a walk, which is obviously the only thing we can do at the minute. Yeah. And he said, do you fancy a walk? So I think I did the same that you do when Becca says it to you.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, sure. Just pop some shoes on quickly. Put a little jumper on, and after about half an hour, I was like, where are we, like, where do you want to... He was like, oh, I've got like a little like route. And I was like, oh, okay. So I just did it. I was like, well, I'm out now. And yeah, I needed like wellies.
Yeah.
It was really enjoyable, but I was freezing and didn't have the right footwear.
Well, we've got, I'm not far from the Yorkshire Dales.
Yeah.
So we will drive like about 40, 50 minutes and be right in the Dales, and then we'd do some nice walks from through there.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. Run out of places to walk around Aylesbury, to be honest.
Right. So we've gone through the wilderness, we've gone through the weather, we've gone through the animals. These are the obvious ones. Now we're going to get into some juicier theories.
So can I just state quickly the ones that I am hoping will come up?
Right, okay. I've got three juicy theories that we're going to go over.
I want one of them to be that there's a secret organization in the middle of that.
Okay.
Like, do it like their own little secret society or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want that.
Or another one, a dimensional tear.
Mm-hmm.
That's the two.
Okay. I'm gonna confirm, neither confirm nor deny those ideas until we come to them.
Oh, until we come to them.
If we come to them.
Oh.
Oh. Right, so the first theory here, this is an obvious one, so I thought I'd do it first. It's always, whenever people go missing, it's always the first crackpot theory to come out. UFOs.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
But
yeah,
planes? Entire planes?
Well, so there's... Well.
Well. Well. That's the other way.
I might just get well, dot, 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 tattooed on me somewhere.
Wow.
So people speculate that in the middle of Mount Hay, in Alaska, is a deep underground military base that houses alien secrets.
Oh, no.
I'd be on this.
No.
Why do they think that?
Why do I not think that?
Well, why do people think that?
Because Alaska's hard to traverse for outsiders to come and find and stumble upon this base. The thing is that the absolute inefficiency of having to power a base in that sort of climate makes unlikely. Like, unless there's a secret power source.
But then the argument would be that no one's going to find it there.
Yeah, but no one has... We can't even power, like, our own stuff in good, like, conditions.
The thing is, they're saying it might be monitoring certain activity that's happening in that area. So there's FBI files that refer to UFO counters within the Alaska Triangle between the years of 1947 and 1950.
Right.
So there are actual UFO encounters. That doesn't mean alien, just an unidentified flying object. There's multiple files, FBI files, reporting them within this triangle area.
Okay.
Especially at the... in the late 40s. So that's why people are like, oh, it might be like a monitoring base if they know there's particular activity around that area. But like Tiss said, that's a hell of an operation to build an underground base within the mountains of Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's mental.
And power it and feed your crew and have a crew and recruit people and... I don't know.
And Mount Hay itself, where they say it is incredibly remote. It's the highest mountain in the eastern Alaska range.
No. Just no.
Maybe all those people that went missing are the recruits, though. There's about 16,000 staff.
Well, they were just like waiting by the road just for the first person to show up. And then it just kept happening. And like, well, we may as well just carry on expanding our team. This is amazing. These guys just keep stumbling into the one area in Alaska.
It just has a good reputation for physicists.
It can't be hiking. That well hidden either if people keep just going missing and just apparently end up in this, well, in though, this mountain this, area.
This... The base itself isn't necessarily why people are going missing, but it's like the UFOs are making people go missing because the usual abduction stories. And yeah. To confirm that fact is there is actually a UFO monitoring station there, so there must be a lot of UFOs. And that area, like they said, like it's no one would find it there because Mount Hayes is inhospitable, like we said, word of the week. It's incredibly remote, not frequently climbed. But I've got I'm going to read a little paragraph here from ufo.fandom.com. /wiki/Mount Hayes.
Oh, man.
But I thought this was interesting. So in the 1997 book Remote Viewers by Jim Schnabel, Schnabel, I think it is.
Let's go Jim with Schnabel.
Yeah, Jim Schnabel, that's the one. Remote viewer Pat Price is quoted saying that, quote, Alaska's Mount Hayes, the jewel of a glacial range northeast of Anchorage, houses one of the aliens' largest bases. Schnabel provides Pat Price's description of the aliens who live deep inside Mount Hayes. So they're saying that it's actually an alien base, some people are saying, right? So Pat Price's description of the aliens who live deep inside Mount Hayes as being very human-looking, differing only in their heart, lungs, blood, and eyes.
Oh, my days.
Ominously, he added that the aliens use, quote, thought transfer for motor control of us. Price is also quoted as saying, quote, the site has also been responsible for strange activity and malfunction of US and Soviet space objects. Whoa, hang on a second. Malfunction of flying, you know, planes and shit going over. This could be it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't explain how they couldn't be found afterwards.
Because they're in the base. They're getting experimented on.
Right.
The aliens haven't looked at them.
Hell of a cleanup crew.
Just how can these people be so sure on their appearance? Like, oh, I think they look like they're buried deep within a mountain. And this guy's like, yeah, they probably just look very much like humans.
But
and
then he might have been there himself.
Yeah, nah, bullshit.
What's his credentials?
Jim Schnabel.
Yeah.
Jim Schnabel, alien professor.
Is he in the same bracket as the diary for Hollow Earth?
Jim Schnabel, yeah, he's the real deal.
Oh, fair enough.
It's a pit. The first picture of him is like him laying in hospital, so it's already weird.
What?
Laying in hospital?
When I type him into Google, the first image that comes up is him laying in a hospital bed. I think he died in 2018. Maybe not. I don't know if he's alive or not. It won't just come up with like a wiki about him. Yeah, and his website is like crashing. Or maybe they don't want us to see it.
Maybe the aliens are making sure that happens.
See, this is the thing, right? He's written this remote viewer. It comes up, his bibliography. He's written this remote viewer's secret history of America's psychic spies is the full title of this. So, wow. But he's also written books about poltergeists, abductions, UFO obsessions, science and immortality. He's a kook,
yeah,
is what I would say. It's the sort of stuff that if we were really serious about the stuff we talked about. But back on this UFO tear. So this is an interesting case that I found. Fairly famous case in 1986. And this is about a Japanese pilot. Captain Terry... what's his name? Teriuchi is the guy's name. Captain Teriuchi. So I'm going to read a brief synopsis from this website here, and then I've got a YouTube clip to play about Teriuchi.
Okay.
So this is from horrorbound.net.
Oh, these websites, man.
So, I know, I did some deep diving on this one.
Even if you do deep dive in these subjects, though, it doesn't. You're still going to come across the same websites.
Yeah, that's true. In 1986, a Japanese plane that was flying to Anchorage from Iceland saw three unidentified objects that followed them for 400 miles through the Alaskan Triangle. The pilot said that one of the objects was twice the size of a regular aircraft. They also saw flashing lights and said that they disappeared and reappeared quickly. Even air traffic controllers reported seeing something on the radar that was 5 miles away from the plane, but couldn't figure out what it was. They were followed for 32 minutes before the UFOs disappeared. Explain that one, Mr. Cynic.
Yeah, all right. I mean, I suppose the only difference is it was twice the size of the plane. That's pretty weird.
So I've got a video here, which is a sort of reenactment of the events with some of the audio and stuff as well from them. So I've got sort of three clips to play from this. I'll sort of pause and we'll go back and forth from the story. And they're like a minute long each. So this is about Captain Teriuchi.
Just after 6 p.m., Captain Kenju Teriuchi and a crew of two enter Alaska airspace for the second leg of their journey, heading for Anchorage. the helm, Captain Terauchi has nearly 30 years in the cockpit. At 6:19 p.m., the crew sees something on the radar. Unable to see another plane outside the window, they ask the control tower to identify it.
Anchorage Center, Japan Air 1628. Do you have any traffic? 11 o'clock above?
Japan 1628, heavy negative.
Moments later, the crew sees a pair of lights on the horizon.
Inside, we have two traffic in front of us, about a mile ahead.
Anchorage Air Traffic Control still sees nothing.
It's a little, just the start of it. So, yeah, so that's the start of this video. I'm going to play sort of a few clips from. And that's Captain Terauchi sort of surprised at seeing these three objects or some sort of object. And at that time, traffic control saying, no, don't know anything about it. Still skeptical?
I'm not skeptical if that's what he saw, but what are we suggesting that it's aliens then?
Well, what else would it be, mate?
Just another human pilot.
I'm all in on the aliens, by the way.
Yeah?
Yeah. I thought you might be.
Right, okay. Well, let's continue this clip then and see where it goes.
Anchorage Air Traffic Control now asks Flight 1628 to maintain visual contact with the unknown craft.
Then if you can hear that, the controller saying, do you think you can tell whether it's military or civilian?
We cannot identify the type, but we can see the strobe lights.
He's saying, can you tell the color of the strobe lights and beacon lights?
The color is white and yellow, I think.
Seeing a massive unidentified flying object.
Massive unidentified flying object. Massive.
How massive?
He said it was quite big, very quite big, so
quite big, very quite big.
Make of that what you will.
Not an alien.
Very quite big puts it on the next tier above quite big then. It's probably the midweight between quite big and really big.
Well, that other thing that we read said it was like twice the size of a regular aircraft, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, it's not out of the realms of possibility that it is just a military aircraft that maybe couldn't be detected on their radar at traffic control.
The detail of it made me go like, oh, that's not very interesting. Is he's like, what color are the lights? And he's like, white and yellow, like just really normal.
Yeah. Yeah, like, oh, just the normal conversation.
I wanted to be like neon purple or something. Whoa.
Yeah, exactly, space. Yeah. Yeah. It would just be like military aircraft, wouldn't it? With some kind of like cloaking device or something.
Right, let's listen to the last part of this clip then. I've sort of skipped ahead to like the next point. So they're continuing on this flight.
19 minutes after first encountering the unidentified craft, the crew nervously requests a new altitude and change to their flight plan. The goal, shake the unknown craft.
Request to deviate from some object, request heading 240.
Spinner 1628, roger, fighting 240. Spinner 1628 heavy. Deviations approved as necessary.
Air traffic control requests that the Japanese airliner make a full circle.
Spinner 1628 heavy. So I'm going to request you to make a right turn 360 degrees. 360 degree turn. If advise me what your traffic does then.
Terra Uchi believes the unidentified object has disappeared. But now military radar picks up something behind the Japanese airliner.
1628 Heavy, military radar advises they are picking up intermittent primary target behind you, in trail, I say again.
So you have radar confirmation of the object, you have professional aviators reporting the object, and military radar spotted them behind and to the left of JAL flight.
After that, an escort was sent, but nothing more was seen. So apparently this object was vanished, but it showed up on the radars. The pilot said he saw it.
Wow.
The official reports that were put out was that it was a cargo plane.
Right, but then surely they would pick that up on their radar.
That's how they explained the blip on the radar.
I mean, is that feasible that some random cargo plane was, I don't know. I mean, that's more feasible than aliens.
I would say yes, but the fact that this Teriuchi guy, they said he's had over 30 years experience as a pilot, I don't think he'd be that shaken by like a random cargo plane.
No, I guess not. No, and he'd also be able to identify it.
Yeah, that's the only thing that's mysterious. The cargo plane just comes from, because it did appear on the radar, and when they were questioned, like, well, what was it then? What was that blip on the radar? They said, oh, it was a cargo plane. That sounds like a cover-up, but that might be them covering up for a military thing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's just going to be military, isn't it? Well, I think so, anyway.
So you're not buying that as a UFO?
No. No, I think unidentified in that they didn't want to identify what it was.
Not an alien UFO.
No.
What about the base on Mount Hayes in it?
Bollocks. Tis?
Yeah.
What? Yep, bollocks.
No, I think it could be. Who knows?
I don't know.
Didn't the US release something saying recently that there have been unidentified crafts that they've detected in American airspace?
Yeah, we spoke about it last year about how there was like they revealed all that UFO stuff and no one cared because it was in the middle of coronavirus.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, with that in
mind,
they
were basically like UFOs are real, and I was like, yeah.
With that in mind, it's like, yeah.
I mean, in my mind, the military have got to test aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have to test it. And the only way of actually testing it is to get it up there and fly it.
Actually, as well, it might do them well to fly it in that sort of environment as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But the military have access to air traffic information, which would put them in a space where they couldn't be seen by civilians, surely.
Everyone makes mistakes.
True.
Or maybe it was like, yeah, maybe it had some kind of cloaking thing that was supposed to make it invisible and that didn't work.
The cloak fell off.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, whoops. Yeah, exactly. just slipped off and
bloody cloak.
Right, so that's the UFO angle. The next one, we're hooking into something that Beef went into at the beginning. He was hoping there'd be some sort of mysterious cryptid.
Oh yeah, come on.
Yeah.
I'm ready for this.
So this is the Kushtaka.
Oh.
Oh. The Kushtaka.
Which I wasn't aware of before. Roughly translate to land otter man.
Oh, wow. That sounds creepy. Otter man.
Yeah, like a man-sized otter creature. So I initially was really excited by this because you know how much I love my cryptids. And
yeah.
And this was one of the first things I actually looked into because I was like, cool, Alaskan cryptid. And it just feels more like a folklore story to me. It doesn't feel like something that's real. So the information I've got is that apparently it's a shapeshifter, potential shapeshifter. So I'm like, anytime someone says it's a shapeshifter, I'm like, I'm out. It's too unrealistic.
No, forget it. It
can transform into a human, an otter, or other creatures. It can be warded off by copper dogs. Potentially fire and urine.
Or piss on it.
Yeah. I like this. It has a high-pitched three-part whistle that goes low, high, low. So like, I don't know, low, high, low.
Yeah, I guess so.
I like that. I like that little detail. I like that. I don't know why, but
is that
detail.
Like when you bump into it and goes mwah mwah mwah, and then
yeah,
you die?
You're done for.
Yeah.
Apparently, particularly preys on children. I guess because they're small targets, it can drag off. So they originates from legends and folklore of the Tlingit people, which are coastal people in Alaska. And there are legends saying that it can trap your soul.
Oh, lovely.
Aside from that, there are also Bigfoot sightings in the triangle as well. But I haven't really got any information on that. Everything I saw about that was just people like, yeah, apparently Bigfoot's there too. It's more about this land otter, man.
But, are there any pictures?
Well, it's really hard to get pictures that look any good. But what I've got here, and this really made me laugh, so I hope you enjoy this. I found two clips from a TV series called Alaska Monsters, which was on YouTube under Destination America Videos. And basically, it's these it's these guys who go hunting beasts in Alaska. And they are so... I can't tell if they really believe what they're doing or they're really hamming up for the camera, but they're so into the idea of hunting this.
Classic. It's classic. It's the sort of thing you're going to find on the Discovery Channel. Just
It's like, the sort of thing that that Weird Tales TV show that we were in talks for a little while ago would have ended up being.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing kind of glad it never happened. Because when I look at these guys, I'm like, this could have been us.
Being paid to... be genuinely concerned.
Make an arse out of yourself.
Yeah.
It would have been like that for sure.
I really hope you guys enjoy these videos because I enjoyed them. So I've got two videos here. The first one is these guys talking about the Otter Man. They just call it the Otter Man. And they're setting out on their hunt.
Lost
Oh, God.
We're going after the Otter Man. The Otter Man is 6 to 8 feet tall, over 500 pounds, and has brown fur all the way down his back. The local natives say he's able to shapeshift into any form he wants to.
You guys want to see the photo?
Hell yeah. Steve says he has a trail cam photo of this Otter Man, and I gotta see this damn thing.
This is the Kushtika.
Son of a bitch.
Holy cow. That ain't no damn bear. This creature is massive. I've never seen anything like that, and walking on its hind legs. Look at the tail.
That
mustache.
Oh, yeah. The Otter Man is out here on the land because Alaska's got 3 million lakes. This Otter Man is walking from one lake to the next lake.
Steve, I really want to thank you for the information. We know the Otter Man is in the area and using this trail.
Anytime.
Knowing that the Otter Man travels on land now gives us a good idea where to set the trap.
I want to watch it. Yeah. I would have watched the whole series.
So that's part one.
Oh, my life.
When I stumbled across this, I was just like, gold. Absolutely.
This is
gold.
Pure gold. Oh, beautiful. I love stuff like that.
Yeah, it's so hammy, isn't it?
It is. It's terrible. And then when they see the photo...
Can you imagine when that logo comes up at the end? Can you imagine if it just says, like, Weird Tales and the Unexplainable?
Oh.
That's what it would have been.
Yeah, exactly.
It sounds glamorous, but that's what it would have been. And we would have probably got paid shit for it.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah.
It would have got paid nothing, and it would just been a complete embarrassment.
Yeah.
Yeah, forget it. Forget it, mate.
And it would have been like long hours. We would have been like cranky at each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then having to do that kind of hammy acting, like, look at this photo, boys. It would have been someone, we would have had to work with that guy called Krusty, who is a researcher.
It means he's got the internet.
Like, what do you think of this, boys? Like, could you imagine the first episode, we all be like, whoa, yeah, let's go fight. And by the end, we'd be like, I quit.
I mean, if any producers are listening, if you want, our contract's now expired, that show isn't happening. So, you know, We'll consider it.
We'll still sell out, please.
So that's part one. If you believe, it gets better.
Oh, I mean, I loved that.
This is them actually out on the hunt at night.
Okay.
And this is about 2 minutes long, and it's 2 minutes of absolute gold.
I'm so excited.
We're in Zone 10, known as the Valley of the Lost Gold, and we're going after the Ottermen. This creature was first seen 800 years ago and was known to the native Alaskans as the Kushtaka. Legend has it this creature can shapeshift, and it can change into any form it pleases. Yeah, this is pretty spooky.
You can tell something came right through here.
Not sure what it is. What the hell?
What's that?
We got movement.
Movement.
We got movement over here. What do you got?
Got movement.
We got movement. No. There's something right
there. Oh, something!
Are they shooting their guns?
Yes.
Oh my god.
What is going on?
It's like what Most Haunted with guns.
I'm just going to pause to fill you in on what happened in a real quick cut. One of them got dragged into the water, apparently. That's when they all started firing their guns.
Oh, are you kidding?
No.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Pulled me in the water. We come across the edge of the pond, and we heard something splash, and I saw some movement. Brett and I hauled ass over here to see it, and I was looking. Something reached up and grabbed my leg, pulled me into the freaking pond. Scared the out of me.
You got a copy?
Target went in the water.
What?
We just got a couple shots out of it.
We don't know what it is. We need some backup.
Copy. We're headed that way.
Let's get the hell out of here. Let's get away from the water.
Yeah, where we are. Yeah, what's going on, man? Check that out. What'd you see?
Man, someone pulled me in. I'm soaking wet.
No,
brother. I heard a splash or something. Saw some movement. Me and Rat hauled ass over there.
What'd it look like?
I don't know. I was standing on the edge. Something come up and reached two hands come around both sides of my leg and just snatched my ass.
No,
just like that. I was bent down, and by the time he went in the water and the shots went off, I couldn't even get over there. Man, it was just that quick. Man, I don't know what happened here. I've been wandering these woods for 40 years. There is no animal in Alaska that can reach out of the water and pull you right in the water like that.
Are you sure you're okay?
Yeah,
you sure you can walk?
I love that they put researcher under his name.
This animal is like nothing we have ever encountered before. We got to keep that in mind when we're building a trap to try to contain this thing. Let's get out of here.
Let's go. Come on.
So they grabbed his ankles and just dragged him into the water, apparently.
Apparently.
I don't believe him.
None of them thought to say, did you fall in?
I think he tripped over and tried to make it seem more dramatic.
Yeah, for sure. He fell on his ass.
I think he either tripped over or made it up.
Yeah, yeah. They were like, God, this is supposed to be like, this whole show is called Alaska Monsters. The most famous Alaska monster is the Kushtaka, and we've got nothing for this episode. We have to make it dramatic.
Yeah. For sure. Anything they can chop up into an advert and make it seem like something's happening, and then when you watch the program, nothing's happening.
Yeah. And I've paused that little bit of footage where he gets so-called, quote-unquote, dragged into the water. I've paused and, like, checked every frame of that. You can't see anything. It's like, just so happens that's when the camera light is looking away and stuff.
Of course it is.
Ah.
That's when it would happen. That's what, yeah, it's like...
It's amazing. My mouth dropped open when they started opening fire.
Yeah, that is
yeah,
so...
Yeah, that's mental.
It's so ridiculous.
I had to pause it because you guys were just like, are they shooting?
Yeah.
That's mental.
What, it's like Most Haunted, but with guns.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to shoot the ghosts.
Gun-toting maniacs, just like, woohoo!
at something that they believe can shapeshift. So,
yeah,
presumably would have just moved away and shrunk down so they can't. I mean, I just can't.
For all they know, it dragged their mate in and then shapeshifted to look like their mate and came back out again.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And their mate's dead.
At this point, yeah, exactly. We Come in Peace is off the table.
when you've got you bring shotguns to an alien meet.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're trigger happy as hell, like just waiting for someone to scream so you can...
Literally one of their friends fell over and they all started shooting into the wilderness.
It's mental.
Could you imagine, right? You think of any like wildlife documentary you've ever seen where they're trying to capture footage of something. I mean,
I've never seen someone try and shoot into the wilderness.
No. They're like dead silent, total silence so that they can make sure they capture it.
Yeah.
I just can't believe it.
I was so glad I found that, because until I found that, I was like, oh, I really want to talk about Kushtika, but it just feels like, you know, Alaskan natives, cool folklore story. It doesn't sound like something that's like a good real cryptid.
Yeah.
When I found that, I was like, gold.
I love that, like, they couldn't find anything either, and they did that, and now we couldn't find anything, so we've just plucked their trick. If we're, like, second-handing their dirty trick.
Yeah, it's desperate, isn't it?
At least they originated that, that episode.
Yeah, that's true.
That's brilliant, though.
We're way worse than them. So, in terms of what's causing all the disappearances in the Alaska Triangle, I don't think it's the Kushtika.
No.
No.
From that promotional video, the Kushtika is down the league below Bigfoot for me.
Unless that was funded by like the Kushtika cover-up fund to make it look unbelievable.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Man, I can't believe that.
Right, so let's move on to the final sort of more bizarre possible explanation. So we've done UFOs, we've done more cryptids.
More bizarre than that. I'm ready.
Well, this one is actually, like, in a weird way, more believable than the first two. And Tiss almost touched on it. So Tiss said something...
Dimensional. Or secret society.
Well, not the secret society. This is the dimensional stuff.
So this not is, that one.
This is energy vortexes.
Oh, okay.
Something that we've not really talked about on the show, and from the little glimpse I got of it here, maybe there's something in there for a future episode.
Okay.
I found a good thing that sort of explains them in a layman's way. I'm just finding it here.
Yeah, that's what I need.
Okay, here we go. So this is from legendsofamerica.com, and this is from a piece all about the Alaska Triangle. So it's legendsofamerica.com/Alaska Triangle. And in amongst the article, there's a bit where they explain about energy vortexes and why that is a possible theory. So I'm going to read that from here, and then we've also got a video about that as well. So here we go. There are many that support the idea of energy vortexes within the triangle. Energy vortexes are thought to be swirling centers of energy concentrated in specific places where the energy crackles most intensely. The energy radiates in a spiraling cone shape, clockwise or counterclockwise, creating positive or negative effects. They are thought to affect humans in various physical, mental, and emotional ways. Positive vortexes spiral upward in a clockwise motion, creating an enhancing flow of energy. This type is said to be conductive to healing, meditation, creativity, and self-exploration. People actively search these places out to feel inspired, recharged, or uplifted. Some of the places where positive vortexes are said to exist are the Egyptian pyramids, Stonehenge, the Sedona Desert, and sacred temples and cathedrals throughout the world. Alternatively, negative vortexes spiral downwards in a counterclockwise motion, creating a draining or depleting energy and depleting the positive energies in its vicinity. In humans, they are believed to cause health problems, including depression, nightmares, disorientation, confusion, and both visual and audio hallucinations. They are also said to cause electrical instruments to malfunction. Some places that are said to be filled with negative vortexes are the Bermuda Triangle, Japan's Devil's Sea, and Easter Island. I've got a quote here from a book called Terror Vision, A Traveler's Guide to the Living Planet Earth by Paige Bryant. quote, a vortex is a mass of energy that moves in a rotary or whirling motion, causing a depression or vacuum at the center. These powerful eddies of pure earth power manifest as spiral-like coagulations of energy that are either electric, magnetic, or electromagnetic of life force, qualities of life force. So what are we thinking to these guys so far?
It's like you say, even though it's bizarre, it's more believable than Otterman.
Yeah.
Bizarrely.
Otterman set the bar super fucking low, though.
That's why I put this one at the end, because it was more believable than Otterman. It made like an Otterman sandwich. Because, Tiz, I know, obviously, so Tiz, you have some belief in like positive energies, negative energies and stuff. So is this... Would you lean more into this being possible, or does it sound nonsensical to you?
I don't know. I don't really understand those sorts of sciences, but anything can be possible, right?
To me, it makes sense when they're saying, oh, well, certain places have not negative energy or positive energy. That's like simple enough for me to be like, maybe. But when they're talking about cones spiraling, I'm like, are these visible? Are these I don't understand.
Yeah. I can imagine there's like certain parts of the magnetic field on the Earth that are more hospitable. I can't think that they make a huge difference.
The fact that it said it interferes with like electrics and stuff could also explain the planes coming down and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But is this just all, this is all just theory, is it? This idea of vortexes? Or is it like a proven theory?
No, it is a theory. It's not proven.
Okay.
I missed off the last paragraph here. So there's one more bit. Electronic readings in Alaska have found large concentrations of magnetic anomalies, some of which have disrupted compasses to the point where they're as much as 30 degrees off. In addition, some search and rescue workers have also reported having audio hallucinations, disorientation, and lightheadedness. So that sort of...
That seems plausible. I mean, if that's going to interfere with your compass and you're out on a big hike, then, yeah, that makes sense. And also, the hallucinations, like, again, like, surely that's down to the weather and maybe the altitude, depending on how high you are.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
So that seems pretty plausible. That's what I mean. I think most of these things... It's like when we talked about Elisa Lam all those like episodes ago.
Although that's like 3 years ago, but yeah.
It was years ago, yeah. All those episodes ago, yeah. It just feels fresh in my head because I just watched the documentary again on Netflix.
Right, yeah, like,
But with all these kinds of disappearances, you want to believe the weirdest thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like whatever the weirdest conspiracy is, the strangest possible thing. But... ultimately, it's always more likely to be just the most logical explanation. Mm. And someone's compass not working properly or the weather affecting people in certain ways is probably more plausible.
You know what? That area effect, whether this vortex is or not, if there is a certain electromagnetic anomaly in that part of the world due to just magnetic... I don't know about magnets and the Earth. I know it's the whole thing. But if that's affecting compasses, that could definitely affect the compass on board a plane, which could lead people to go in the wrong direction and then into all sorts of mess. That feels like a pretty good explanation to me for some of these planes.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, like the technology we use to navigate hasn't changed a great deal. Mm. Like... it's probably more accurate, but at the end of the day, it still relies on the same science, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. This is where we get someone emailing in and saying,
we don't know anything, but our listeners should know that by now.
To my knowledge, which is very limited and shit.
Very limited and shit.
Like, what there is of it, it's not very good.
But yeah, if you were to get like if you were to get a compass on your iPhone and then an actual compass, they're not going to give you different answers, are they? Like it's still
I suppose not.
So Yeah, so that's what I mean. Like, the technology's not changed.
That might be the biggest self-put-down I've ever heard. My knowledge, which is limited, and what there is of it is shit. Might as well just pack it all in.
Oh, brilliant.
Right, I've got one more video for you now. This is from a series called Missing in Alaska. And the video is called Did a Vortex Swallow a Plane? And this is going to be a little bit more information about the vortexes.
Did a vortex swallow a plane?
On a cold January night in 1950, a military transport plane rumbles through the Alaskan skies. 2 hours into the flight, they communicate with base, and then they vanish. Inside the vast frontier of Alaska is a mysterious triangle where each year, 5 out of every 1,000 people go missing. The team's investigation begins outside Snag, Canada, right at the edge of the triangle.
No single event captures the mystery of the Alaska Triangle better than this lost C-54.
You know, back in the 1970s, there was a study conducted to look at different areas around the planet where there were high incidences of missing airplanes and ships. And a lot of it was related back to geomagnetic properties. So there's this theory that perhaps we're dealing with these sort of vortex areas.
A vortex is suspected in the infamous Bermuda Triangle, which has claimed planes and boats for centuries.
I was wondering if you could give us your opinion on possibilities of vortexes.
It's certainly one of those things you have to look at. You hear the numbers about accidents, and Alaska's always many times above the norm for the United States.
It is possible that vortices have been seen by Native peoples for thousands of years. Mystical spirals can be found in the Native artwork all over the Americas. Whatever inspired that art obviously made a lasting impression.
You know, with regard to the vortex, I do have a theory that when the vortex opens, theoretically, it releases this huge amount of electromagnetic energy. When it closes, you have kind of a dramatic reduction in electromagnetic energy. That type of energy might affect, you know, aircraft, instruments, things like that, and cause them to crash. Theoretically, it's been proven that something like a vortex could exist. And perhaps here in the Alaska Triangle, this so-called vortex could be the cause of many of the strange disappearances and airplane crashes. We'll never know for sure.
Wow.
So there we go.
I really like that as a theory.
Yeah.
It's one of them ones that when I first read it, I was like, bollocks. And then when they started speaking, I started seeing a few clips like that. I used that one because it was nice and short, but I was like, oh, actually, there might be something to this. And it just what made me think, like, maybe we could look more into vortexes for an episode at some point.
Because
It's something that sounds wacky and science fiction, but actually when they start explaining it like that, you're like, well, maybe, I don't know.
We could get Jack involved again somehow.
Yeah.
To help us understand.
Text him at some point. Just say, Jack, do you know anything about energy vortexes?
Like, how can you explain it to me? Because, and in a really simple way, because my knowledge of these things is limited and shit.
And shit.
And shit. Yeah.
So there we go. There
well,
are,
I like that.
There are theories. We've got UFOs, Krishtika, vortexes, as well as severe weather, harsh wilderness, wild animals. What are we thinking causes these 16,000 disappearances since 1988?
Surely it is all of the above, excluding mental, like, mountain bases for UFOs and aliens, and excluding Ottoman. Because the weather would account for a lot of it. And the weather, when you think about it, the weather combined with the possibility of an energy vortex or electromagnetic activity messing with compasses on planes and just people.
As well as electronics.
Like, yeah, exactly. That, to me, sounds like the perfect storm. Pardon the pun.
And then the massive snowfall, like Tis was saying, on top of everything, as soon as something crashes, it's dusted over. So all these search parties are going to have a hell of a job finding anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's already been swallowed up.
All these huge glaciers there, they said that holes can form in those. So if something crashes onto one of those and falls straight through it, then you're not going to find it, are you?
No. No, exactly. So it sounds to me like all of those things combine for this, just like, yeah, for it to happen time and time again. People should learn and just not fly through it.
And Tiss, you're still on the opinion that it's the UFOs?
Most believable right now is the vortexes.
Okay.
Well, you changed your tune,
I'm really
then,
surprised
Tiss.
That we've all come down like, yeah, vortexes. It sounds like something that is, it's what, like I said, it sounds like something that's crazy when you say it, energy vortex. But actually, the way these people explain it, I'm like, maybe. Something that we need to look into.
Yeah.
More believable.
It might just be, we might be so up on it because it followed those crazy guys shooting their guns
into
trees
maybe,
and stuff.
Maybe. Do you, I mean, isn't the planet like one big magnet or something like that?
Yeah. The pole's probably got the North and South Pole, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. So, yeah, it's probably something in that. Probably not in the way that I'm thinking of magnets.
I mean, anyone who knows anything about this is just hating this.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, it may be the case that the theory just before it was so crackpot and mental that anything after that, maybe like anything after that would have been good.
I mean, we might wake up in a cold sweat at like 3 in the morning this morning and go like, energy vortexes, what was I thinking?
What were we talking about? Because you could have said after Otterman, oh, is a consortium of crabs going around just murdering people.
Right, okay, so there we go. That's what I've got on the Alaska Triangle, guys.
That was really cool. I liked that. That was really interesting.
It's something a little bit different. I actually went a little bit further than I was expecting it to go. The only other thing that I was going to look into of Alaska, but I sort of ran out of time, is there are reports of this famous ghost ship. But when I looked into it, it's just like any other ghost ship, as in it's not full of ghosts. It's an abandoned ship that floats around. It's that form of ghost ship. I was like, okay, kind of weird that it's hung around for so long, but there's no spooky ghosts on board. So I sort of didn't go too much, because that is quite, there's loads of information on that. It's a really famous ghost ship, but it just wasn't enough meat to be put into this. But actually, if listeners do want to look into it, if they're interested in that stuff, it's a really interesting story. It's the SS Baychimo, B-A-Y-C-H-I-M-O. So if you're interested in ghost ships, it's a real famous one. And that's it. That's the Alaska Triangle.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, my internet dropped out for a second.
That's cool. I'm glad it wasn't mine.
Yeah, it's all right. I was just telling listeners where to go to find out about the SS Baychimo.
Telling the listeners where to go.
Yeah, tell them where to fucking get off. Right, listeners, talking of listeners, alluded to a few times throughout this episode, but we have to give listener of the week to the person who suggested that I look into some of the weirdness in Alaska. I'm scraggling for the information here. Dakota Kendall, you recommended I look into some of this stuff on Alaska on the Facebook page, and it was a really interesting sort of diversion for me to look into this stuff, and I hope it made for a good episode. So thanks, Dakota. You are listener of the week.
Listener of the week.
Listener of the week. Thanks, Dakota. That was fun.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, and thanks for suggesting, and I hope more of you suggest interesting things like that, because I always love getting these bizarre, I would never have thought to look into this, I'd never heard of it. So every now and then we get suggesting something obvious that we haven't done, which we appreciate as well, something like Zodiac. But every now and then we get these sort of more off-kilter ones as well.
Mm.
And they all, everyone that gets suggested goes on this big long list that we've got. So, you know, there is always a chance that we might get to the thing that you've suggested. So now, pet of the week. We're still doing pets of the week. I don't remember if right at the beginning of pet of the week we ever mentioned Sean's bulldog Mavis.
I don't remember. I think
I remember us mentioning her, but I don't know if we ever made a listener of the week. But if we haven't, I wanted to give a shout out because she had a litter of puppies.
Oh my god!
No way.
And so Sean has these amazing puppies here.
Ah, cool.
Tiny bulldog puppies.
Oh my god.
They're incredibly tiny. Sean, I've been watching your pictures on Facebook of the bulldogs.
Did we get a Weird Tales puppy? Is this where it's leading?
Oh, do you remember really early on? Didn't someone name their pets like Bob Beef and Tiss or something? They had a cat or a dog.
Oh my god.
They had some... a litter, and they were called Bob Beef and Tiss.
And I feel like they now regret that decision.
Listener, if you're still listening and you remember doing that, let me know if you still listen. I'd love to know. And whatever happened to those. And remind me, was it cats, dogs? This is like 5 years ago. I would love to know where they are.
It might have been triplets.
Pet of the week. Pets of the week is this amazing litter of bulldog puppies.
Mm. Oh, that's awesome.
They are called Dolly, Sage, Captain, and Balboa.
Oh,
nice. Awesome.
So there we go.
Nice names.
Is Sean keeping them all?
I don't know. I mean, he's got to be tempted to keep at least one of them, right?
Yeah.
You think so?
Sean, let us know if you're keeping any of them puppies. So talking of pets, I don't know if you guys have a charity planned out for this month yet.
I hadn't even thought about it, to be honest.
Yeah. I thought about it today, and because I try and sometimes we do these charity stuff, and sometimes it's good to do like a big cause that's going on at the time, and sometimes it's good to pick one that's like close to us or like a smaller charity. So what I've got here is one that's kind of close to me and a smaller charity as well. So this is to do with pets and how much we all love pets, and they're a small charity that are obviously having a bit of trouble because of Corona, like everyone. And this is the Beds Bay Stray Cat Rescue. They actually helped me out with my stray cat years ago when I had my stray cat, when we found her. And they have huge running costs at the moment and all these pets, and they can't really do a lot of the stuff they can normally do because of the Corona stuff. And they have still got stray cats coming in that they need to inoculate and get better and all this stuff. So they have a lot of fees to cover and stuff. So I was going to help them out because they helped me out back in the day with my little cat. So I was going to donate this time to the Stray Cat Rescue based in Bedfordshire.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. I was literally going to say something to do with animals.
Yeah, that's what I thought. We talk a lot about pets, and I was like, well, what's a pet charity that's actually helped me out with my little cat in the past? So,
yeah.
Let's give back to them. So I'll arrange a payment for this series of weird tales to go to the Stray Cat Rescue. And I think that's all the business. So, everyone, we talked about suggesting episodes and stuff. Was just saying hi. You can do that directly at the email. That's unexplainableuk@mail.com. You can contact us there to say hi or do any of those things. You can also contact us via the website, which is weirdtalesandtheunexplainable.com. You can find links there to all the stuff that's useful to do, our Twitter accounts and our Facebook page and our TeePublic store to buy merch and t-shirts and stuff. You can donate monetarily on that page, all that stuff. You can also go to my website, bobshoy.com, B-O-B-S-H-O-Y. This is part of the Bob Shoy Podcast Network. You can see other shows I work on there that you may enjoy, and you can support my time editing and researching for these podcasts at patreon.com/bobshoy, B-O-B-S-H-O-Y. Nice and snappy. And I think we're done.
Awesome. Thanks,
that's really
Bob.
Good.
That was
cheers,
thanks,
man,
for taking us safely through the Alaskan Triangle.
Yeah, I pulled out the bag. Listeners, I've been actually feeling pretty ill today, so this almost didn't happen, but I feel okay and I'm glad we got through it. Next time, Beef, it's your episode.
I know. I need to get thinking.
Yeah. Get thinking. I believe in you.
I hit the classic go into something pretty keen on it and then it didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, that happens to me all the time.
So annoying.
I feel like, for me, Tiss started this series with such a banger and requested topic of Zodiac that I was almost
like...
It's
all your fault, Tiss.
I don't really care whatever mine's going to be. It's always going to be a letdown after Zodiac, so I went for something a bit more out there, a bit more completely the opposite of Zodiac, really, like an unheard-of mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of it.
No, it was good.
No, I hadn't. So, Beef, yeah. I'm sure you can round out this series with something nice, and then I've got a revisited plan that I need to record with Rick soon, and that'll be us for this run. They always go by so quick.
I know, I can't believe it. It's crazy.
But everyone, thanks for listening. And until next time.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, until next time, just be safe out there. Don't go climbing any mountains in the Alaskan Triangle.
And don't stumble across any moose, because they're massive.
Yeah.
And
On a serious note, sure they are really big, so be careful if you're around any moose. public safety announcement.
And don't go off the beaten track, and make sure your compass is working before you leave the house.
Doesn't matter if your compass is working, mate. Them vortexes are going to fuck you anyway. Bye-bye.
That's
love
true.
You lots.
So,
bye.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Lots of love. Cheers.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Love you too.
How, what, sorry, this is totally off topic, but Japanese rice cookers, what is the difference between that and cooking on the hob? Because I know there must be.
So much.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're so good. We use ours all the time now.
What do you do?
I bought it in December. You just put whatever, you has a scoop, so whatever type of rice you're doing, you can do all sorts in it.
Yeah.
And depending on what type of rice, there's different levels inside the pot.
Okay.
So it absorbs the exact amount of water to make the rice like exactly as sticky or however as it should be.
Right.
So you can make proper sticky Japanese rice. You can do like whole grain rice. It's like really fluffy. Basmati rice is done properly. It's not. It's
can you
completely
store rice
thing.
In it over time, or is it just a cooker?
You can time it so that you can, if we want onigiri, if we're going for a walk, we can say, okay, it takes about 40 minutes to cook. So we're like, okay, set it for 6 in the morning to cook. At 20 to 7, it'll beep, and then we can make them in the morning and go. You can set what time it starts.
Fucking sick! That's it. That's it.
And
timed
then you've got his,
rice.
Like, paddle.
That's what you need.
If you're interested in getting one, I would definitely recommend the one that I did a lot of research before we got ours.
Yeah.
And ours is amazing, and it's just right amount for 2 people.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can do a bit more as well, but like for 2 people, 1 scoop it comes with for 2 people is like perfect. And we do stuff weekly. Every time we do a curry, I do basmati in it. We do proper Japanese rice in it. Jasmine rice when doing Thai food.
The timer on it is so attractive because
yeah,
like
time
you said,
is great.
You can time it for the morning, make onigiri and then...
Yeah, we've been making sushi with it and stuff.
Oh my God.
It'll make proper sticky sushi rice.
And the sushi's like top quality from it.
Yeah, it's banging.
Oh, mate.
So well, that is
what's
my
our price range?
I was
are we
not
looking,
convinced that we would use it, and we use it all the time.
What's the price bracket you're talking?
I think ours was about 80 or 90 quid.
That's good. Under
that's
100
a
pounds.
Real, that's,
for a kitchen gadget.
That's a Korean one. That's a Korean company.
Sorry,
that
beef.
No, it's.
I. You know what? I've been looking at rice cookers for ages, and I've just been like. Like lids will totally be just like, nah, it's fucking bullshit. And I'm just like, there must be something to it though.
Yeah,
they
no,
wouldn't make
I,
them.
I was always saying they're bullshit, and Becca was talking into it. And then I bought it as like a surprise sort of thing. I was like, oh, I've got us a rice cooker, and we do use it all the fucking time.
Oh,
I can't
God.
Imagine doing rice on a hob again. I even did coconut rice in it the other day. I poured a tin of coconut milk in with the rice with water and sugar, and
yeah.
It made perfect coconut rice.
Oh my fucking life, man. This is going to change. This is game change. Sorry, beef. Let's carry on with the episode.
No, it's fine. I don't mind. I would eat more. I love Japanese food, but Rachel doesn't like it. So we just don't do it.
It is an acquired taste. Japanese food's a very like different taste. It's
yeah, exactly.
Umami
yeah.
that we don't really have in
I didn't know that umami was like the scent in with your taste. You've got bitter, sour, sweet,
yeah.
salty, and umami. Umami is yeah. like its own thing.
Yeah, that's why, because we don't have anything umami in our country at all. If someone tastes some Japanese food, they're like, it tastes weird to me. It's like, yeah, it's a whole nother flavor that
yeah.
you're just not used to.
Yeah, it really
kind
is.
Kind of
yeah.
just, it's hard to explain. I guess the easiest you could explain it is like it tastes like the sea.
Yeah.
but yeah. it's a like, weird flavor, isn't it?
Like miso paste.
Exactly. Because I remember the first time I ever had miso years ago, I was like, this isn't right. This doesn't taste right. There's something wrong with this. And then when you adjust to that flavor, it's like you crave it.
Yeah, you start craving it, yeah.
But we eat a lot of Asian food anyway, so.
Nice.
Right. God.
Awesome.
Right, so that's me, like, spokesperson for Yum Asian rice cookers. I can't even remember what we're talking about now.
Zachary does that, though. Whenever I see Zachary, like, the amount of times I've seen him and he's like, well, not obviously at the minute, but when he was going to college, like, actually going into college, I used to see him on his bike and he'd have, like, a can of Monster and then just, like, a Snickers or some. But, like,
Monster is the prime villain.
And yeah. he's like, yeah, I've got these headaches all the time. I'm like, yeah, because you're drinking Monster. Like, that's what you, look at what's in it. What do
it
you
was
think
Relentless Juiced in my day. Relentless Juiced.
Oh my God, I forgot about Relentless. It looks like it would be painful. I've never tried it.
It looks like diesel.
It's always in that dark brown can.
It does look like diesel. Yeah, that's what really put me onto it, to be honest.
I thought it
put me onto it. It looked like diesel tiss.
It looked like something that had got like sun bleached in the window of a tattoo parlor.
Yeah. It was served at Snow Zone, wasn't it?
That's a thing.
It was like when you change the oil out your car, the stuff that comes out of the car.
That's the stuff that used to come out of Tiss after he had it. It was relentless.
It was relentless.
Oh, God.
Right.
How are you doing, Bob? Are you feeling better?
Yeah, I'm all right now. I was just saying, that's what got us into the conversation. I said I went to work today without any lunch. And it was a really hectic day. And I'm just feeling like I think I was just exhausted and needed some food and shower and everything. I took some headache tablets and everything. I feel fine now.
Oh, good.
You know what it's like at the moment, though? Every time you feel a little bit rough, you're like...
COVID.
The symptoms.
The symptoms. Yeah.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.